Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Here we are. Here the bleep we are. The Monday after Selection Sunday. The lines have been drawn in March Madness, and the ACC is looking pretty damn good. Duke is the number one seed overall. Committee got that right. I mean, after watching the return of Zion, does anybody anywhere have any complaints about Duke being number one overall?
Certainly Duke is Duke.
They are. More so now than ever before. The committee could have just said, we're going to break with the tradition and just advance them to the Final Four right now. And still nobody complains. And to me, that's the biggest thing overall about this year's bracket. The lack of complaints. One conference, the ACC, has three number one seeds. That hasn't happened in a while. Duke, Virginia, North Carolina. Three number one seeds from one conference, and really there aren't any complaints about that. Gonzaga is the fourth number one, and there aren't too many complaints about that. Hey, marinate on that for a minute. Just stop on that for a minute. Gonzaga is a number one, and that is not a huge story. Gonzaga is a number one seed in the NCAA tournament without winning their conference tournament. And while there might be a few complaints here or there, nobody's going to take that to the streets. That's what Mark Few has done at Gonzaga, what he means to Gonzaga. It's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous that it's become so normal. The Zags are a one and nobody blinks. The Zags are a one and they didn't win their conference tournament and nobody complains. It's unbelievable. But then again, you're not hearing a lot of complaints about the field in general. The Sunday night and the Monday morning after the brackets were announced used to be the most rage-filled hours of the year. People tripping, people freaking out because they couldn't figure out why one program was left out or another got in. And then that'd be followed by the head of the committee getting on television and fumbling through some explanation of what happened in that hotel conference room. Explanations that involve phrases like eye test, balance of power, other whack phrases that always made it so much worse. But the last few years, it's been pretty quiet. I mean, I hate to say it because crushing the committee used to be such a blast. Crushing the committee used to be the best sport, but not anymore because they really don't give us any reason to do so. I mean, like the damnest thing happened. They started getting it right. They started to actually get pretty good at it. And in fact, not just pretty good, but damn good, really good. They actually figured it out. Believe me, I would like nothing more than to roll in here this morning and smash the committee. The easiest show of the year would be to crack the committee for a segment and then throw open the phones and let angry fans of schools who were left out do what they do. It used to be that I could clown the committee for being a bunch of stiffs who don't understand basketball, who do super awkward handshakes and high fives. But if you got left out this year, it's on your school, not on the committee. Because like I said, the committee has gotten pretty good at it. Oh, and they're still clever. I mean, like crazy coinky dinks, like a potential reunion of Buffalo and Arizona State, provided the Sun Devils get through the first four in Dayton. You've even got Belmont getting an at-large bid and bringing their head coach to tears. You know, cute stuff like that. And you've got Temple getting a first four shot in Fran Dunphy's last year. So what is there really to be angry about this time around? Michigan State as a two in Duke's region? Sure. I understand why they're bitter. I understand why Tom Izzo's bitter. I will get there in a minute. But there were years where the committee would have been pumped if the only complaint was about the best two seed drawing the best number one seed in the same region. And yeah, Cincinnati probably deserved better than a seven. Same with Wofford. But it wasn't that long ago that Wichita State was an undefeated number one, and they drew Julius Randle, Willie Cauley-Stein, and Kentucky as an eight seed. An eight! You go undefeated your entire season and conference tournament, and you're rewarded with Kentucky in the first weekend. I mean, that was a reason to riot. That was insanity. This year, again, the biggest complaint is Michigan State has to face a team in the Elite Eight. that they'd have to beat to get to the Final Four if they want to win it all. And truthfully, the biggest complaints are never about seeding. It's about who's in and who's out. And if you're in a major conference and you did not make it in, there's a pretty good reason. NC State. I know you NC State fans are bent, but check out your non-conference strength of schedule. I don't want to get all stat head on you State fans, but given that they beat just two tournament teams this season, and their non-conference schedule included juggernauts like Maryland Eastern Shore, I don't know, NC State fan, maybe you sit this argument out. Playing a directional school is one thing. Playing a directional and locational school is another. And Maryland Eastern Shore is just that. I'm sure it's a fine academic institution, and this is not disrespecting. Not about disrespecting Maryland or the Eastern Shore. But from a basketball standpoint, when you start to say the name of the school, it sounds good, Maryland. If you stop there, we're all thinking about the great Terps teams of the past and the fact that this year's team is pretty good too. Then you get to Maryland Eastern, and it's a little less intimidating. And by the time we get to Maryland Eastern Shore, all the intimidation's gone. And they were not the only directional and locational school. South Carolina Upstate is in there too. And yes, that's a real thing. South Carolina Upstate. Same deal, right? If you're playing South Carolina, that's awesome. Frank Martin's crew, that's going to be a battle. But South Carolina Upstate, again, fine school, I'm sure, but not exactly intimidating on the schedule. So let me say it one more time. The committee is getting better and better at doing their jobs. And the fact that people were not looking to rage and burn something last night tells you that. I hate to disappoint y'all, but I'm not bent. And nor am I going to just pretend that I am so the show does itself. Because I'm not lazy and I've got other things to talk about. No bracket is ever going to be perfect. Somebody is always going to be pissed. But this committee did a nice job. We are joined by Lavelle Moten. Lavelle, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, thank you, man. It's an honor and a pleasure. I appreciate it.
You know, it's become something of a tradition that you take your team to the NCAA tournament, and then you and I talk about it. How is your life right now?
It's wonderful, man. Extremely blessed. Man, I've been fortunate to have, you know, I'm healthy. My family's healthy. My kids are healthy. My team has bought into what we're trying to do, you know, so life is great, man. I can't complain.
Can't wait to talk to you about your family, which I'll get to a little bit later on. Let me ask you about that conference championship game against Norfolk State. You knew it was going to be an absolute battle. What was your message to your team before that game?
I told them we just got to grind. You know, the tough thing about that, Jim, and I don't think many people know this, we didn't get back to the hotel till 1 o'clock that morning because our game carried over from the previous night. So the turnaround was probably an 8-9 hour turnaround. So the coaches didn't get any sleep, guys didn't get a lot of rest, and obviously our legs was going to be, you know, gone, and we just had to fight. I told them, look, man, we just got to fight. We got to turn this into a brawl and may the best man win. It's not going to be pretty, but just keep chopping wood and eventually positive things will happen.
Well, this is what happened. You got in late. There was a quick turnaround, and then you fell behind by 10 at halftime, but you turned it around and went on a 26-5 run in the second half. But still, you missed 9 of your last 10 shots and still found a way to finish. What was the second half like for you?
Man, it seemed like we just couldn't make a shot. Like, we were open and just missing clean looks. I thought we were holding the basketball too long and not really attacking, and I don't like talking about the referees, but it's almost like, and it's just basketball, whenever a team is up, they're not prone to get those same calls they got, you know, prior to the score being a major difference. So we didn't go as strong to the rim as we needed to. We were getting fouled, but the referees weren't going to call that because we were up 6 or 8. You know, so I told our guys, man, we just got to be stronger with the basketball and shoot the basketball with confidence.
Clones cannot wait to tell you about one of our new partners here in the jungle, Outer Known. Outer Known is a company founded by pro surfer and 11-time world champion Kelly Slater. I'm guessing anybody listening right now would agree on one thing. My man's got the look. My man looks great. So when I had an opportunity to partner up with a company that makes clothing that was founded by Kelly Slater. That was a no-brainer. I have the clothes. I broke them out at home. The wife thought that I looked cool. My kids thought that I looked awesome. Went down to Newport Beach rocking a sweater the other day. Man, I felt good and got compliments. You see, finding high-quality clothes that fit great is not always easy. Plus, this is a company with a mission to provide great clothing that does not harm the environment. Outer Known clothes are for people and planet. High quality, sustainable clothes, durable construction, and a great fit. Outer Known only works with factories that pay fair living wages and provide safe working conditions. And again, the clothing looks great and it fits great. Go to outerknown.com today, enter my code ROME at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your full price order. Once again, outerknown.com, outerknown.com. Remember to use my code name ROME at checkout and get 25% off. Check them out today, outerknown.com. Do not forget the promo code ROME, and get 25% off. Lavelle Moten, my guest. So next Monday, hard to believe, but it'll be 10 years to the day that you were named head coach at your alma mater. What has the last decade been like for you? And then how much pride do you have in what you and your staff and players have built?
Man, it's really tremendous. It's wild that you said that. You just threw me off with the 10-year decade thing. Wow. Time flies, man. And I just remember the transcript from my press conference. I said, listen, here's the thing. I want to win multiple championships. I want to defeat an ACC school or a Power 5 school, and I want to go to the Final Four. That was my vision. And I just knew that. My mother always told me, you know, being visionary is a gift and a curse. The gift is you can see things other people can't see, but the curse is you got to sit in it alone. So along the way, we had to educate, you know, some people in some high places to kind of help us, and they educated us, and we just rode this boat together, man. And what you're seeing is a manifestation of everyone on that, from the administration to the chancellor to the athletic director to our support team to our team and managers and so on and so forth, coming together, rowing in the same direction.
Lavelle Moten joining us. It's been a great decade and still plenty to come. Now, before Selection Sunday, you said, quote, some coaches will say, we'll take on anyone. We'll be ready. But I don't like any part of playing against Zion. That'd be like me playing my six-year-old son. Look, I love the honesty. I know some of that was tongue-in-cheek. But what was your reaction when you saw the bracket come out and you saw that as a possibility?
Oh, I knew we were going to play Duke if we defeated whoever for our play-in game. We knew what it was, and we followed it as coaches. We knew there weren't any major upsets in the lower mid conferences. So whoever was projected to win the tournament pretty much did, and they got that. So we knew we were going to be a lower seed, and we knew Duke was going to be the top seed once they won the ACC tournament. And I said it tongue-in-cheek. Obviously, it's taken a life of its own, and people changed the narrative or whatever. But our kids know that. You know, they know how I feel about them, and we joke about it all the time. We probably watched Duke 10 times as a team, you know, just by us busting to a game ourselves, and we watch an ESPN, and I'll sit there and I joke with my point guard. I say, look, if we ever play them, you can go ahead and fake an ankle injury because I know you're scared of Trey Jones. And I tell my big man, look, I'll get you some help. I tell Zion, you know, take it easy on you because I know you're scared of him. And they just laugh. And they even come back at me and say, well, Coach, we know you may not show up because Coach K on the sideline. It's just all tongue-in-cheek stuff, man. But we know every man put our pants on just like us. And this program has been built by the chip that we've had on our shoulders. So that's not going to change for any man.
That's such good stuff, Lavelle. I was going to say it, but you said it for me, I think. I know, and you're pretty clear about this, you're not afraid of any man. I know you don't fear Zion. I know you respect him and that program, but I know that you fear no man. So that is good stuff. That's funny. Now, you start off the season by playing Clemson and Cincinnati as your first two opponents in the regular season. That's not exactly easing your way in. You and I have talked about that approach in the past. What was the thinking behind scheduling those two programs, and what did you learn about your guys in those two games?
So we could prepare for this moment. Anytime you're playing high major physical basketball teams, even though you may not win the basketball game, you learn a lot about yourself. And, you know, I told my guys, exposure, you got to be careful because the root word of that is exposed. So if you don't do what you need to do, you're going to get exposed. And I needed to know the true identity of our team. We didn't need an illusion of ourselves. We needed the truth about ourselves so we could have humble spirit and address those things along the way. And I think it's helped us in the long run.
Lavelle Moten joining us. All right, so I mentioned the program is not just about you or the players, and I said I would get to your family. It's also about your six-year-old son, Lavelle Jr., or VJ. There was this amazing moment on senior night when VJ became very emotional at seeing his favorite player, Larry McKnight Jr., being honored. What do you remember about that night?
Jim, they have a special relationship. You know, the backstory to that is we were playing last year, and we weren't playing well, and Larry was sitting on the bench. I wasn't playing him at all. And when I got home, we had lost the game, and my son looked me dead in my face and said, "Daddy, I'm telling you, zero is the hero, and zero is Larry's number." And I was like, why would he say that? And I just thought it was a sign from God. The next game I put Larry in, he had like 22 points on 7-on-7 shooting. So I was like, my son is smarter than me, so I got to play this kid. And they just connected. And fast forward to senior night, my son always plays basketball in his room. I got him a Nerf Gold, so he's always in his room playing. And you can hear him commentating. And it's always a 2-on-2 battle. So the other night it was him and Larry versus Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. And VJ is always saying, well, VJ spins, he passed to Larry. Larry passed it back, and VJ shoots, he scores. And so he's doing that all the time. And my son really thought that Larry was going to play at North Carolina Central for 12 more years so they could play in the backcourt together. And my wife had to explain to him, no, baby, like, this is senior night. Larry can't play here anymore. And once we broke that news to VJ, that was the video that everyone saw. And I said, he said, so I'm never going to see Larry again? He just didn't understand. I said, no, you'll still see him. He just can't play here anymore. So he said, we can't play together when I get big? And I was like, nah. I said, but he going to be around. I said, go give him a hug. And when he gave him a hug, he just broke down. So it was a genuine, raw emotion of a pure and innocent kid connecting with an incredible basketball player, an incredible person that touched the world. I thought it was a beautiful moment.
Man, I'm so glad you shared that. That is an amazing thing to hear. So as a father, Lavelle, what's that like to share that ride with him?
Oh, man, it's everything, because I don't know if you remember in 2014, the first time we won the championship, he had an accident the day we were supposed to leave. He spilled coffee on his face, and we had to rush him to the emergency room in the burn center. He had third-degree burns, so I wasn't going to go to the our first tournament to coach against Iowa State, and my wife said, no, you need to go. And I felt so guilty, man, and I don't even remember 10 plays from the game because I just wanted to get back home to my child while he was in the hospital. And I said, from that moment, I'm always going to keep him around, like, because I had to put everything into perspective. Basketball meant the world to me, and at times I had put that first and before some things that I probably shouldn't have, but never again. And I've learned the value of family through that.
Lavelle Moten joining us. Before I let you go, and I appreciate your thoughts on all of that so much. You know, you and I have talked about your journey in the past, but you share a history and a tradition with a couple of my other favorite guys, Nate McMillan and PJ Tucker. Y'all went to the same high school. For those who don't know, what is the high school, and then what's it represent to that community, or to you, to represent that community at the highest level?
Man, it's something special about Southeast Raleigh. And the name of the high school was Enloe High School, and we recently got our jerseys retired all three of them time. And, you know, I tell people, it's not the city of Raleigh, it's just that community that's like a two-mile radius from one another. And it's birthed myself and John Wall and P.J. Tucker and Nate McMillan and Danny Young and Devontae Graham, Jerome Robinson, like, the list goes on, and it's all in this two-mile radius, man. So it's wonderful. Nate McMillan was like my big brother. He raised me. I became a big brother to P.J. Tucker, and P.J. is passing the torch down to others in the community, man. So it was a beautiful thing, and a moment we'll cherish forever.
Hey, Lavelle, I got about a minute left. I got to ask you, the story from back in the day was that Nate popped, and he said he had heard about you. What did that mean to you, and what do you remember about that?
It meant the world, because growing up, my childhood coaches always said, man, you remind me of Nate McMillan. I was like, who was Nate McMillan? And I had heard his name long before I actually knew who he was, because I think Nate was 10 years older. And he came back and he threw a basketball camp. It's the first basketball camp I ever went to in my life. He bought his teammate at the time, X-Man, Xavier. And when I got to the camp, he said, man, I heard some tremendous things about you. He said, I want you to stay off these streets. Stay away from these gangs and these drugs, and you keep your head on straight, and you'll be special, and I'm going to help you and support you. And I never forget that from him.
So good. Head basketball coach at NC Central. Led the Eagles to their third straight conference tournament title, fourth in 6 years in Lavelle. I look forward to that conversation every single year at this time. Thanks for keeping up your end of the deal, my man. Great to have you back on. Good luck.
You're the best, man. Appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Hey, now, let me take you back. Let me take you way back, in fact, all the way back to 1989, the year the World Wide Web was invented. We've come a long way, right, in 30 years. So why does it feel like the software that you use every day at work is still stuck in the past? Take a leap into the future by finding the right software for your business by going to Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, you can discover everything you need to make an informed decision. Hey, listen, don't beat yourself up over this. I was doing the same thing. I was using the same thing. Tired, beat software that would not help me do what I need to get done until I went to Capterra. Trust me, you do not know how bad you have it until you go there yourself. Listen, I would never ask you to do something that I did not do myself. So here is what I need you to do. Visit Capterra.com/Rome. Do it for free today and find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Rome. I'll spell it for you. Capterra, Capterra.com/Rome. Capterra.com/Rome. Hard-pressed to find anybody who's got a really strong argument. Except maybe sort of kind of Michigan State. And they're pissed, understandably so. They just went 28-6. They just won the Big Ten tournament. And they find out they're the number two in Duke's region. Then again, I could argue, anybody who's a number two in Duke's region is going to be pissed. But it's even worse when you're Michigan State and you see Michigan, the team that you beat three times this year, getting the number two seed in Gonzaga's region. Tom Izzo's got to be thinking, why am I and my players killing themselves to win this tournament when it really doesn't matter? The Big Ten tourney. And if they're winning that tourney and they're still being put in Duke's bracket, then that conference tournament really doesn't matter. How can it matter if they win it and they beat Michigan three times and Michigan has to deal with Gonzaga, but Michigan State's got to deal with Duke just to get to the Final Four? Again, nothing against the Zags. This is an enormous Mark Few house. You know that. But no one anywhere disputes that Duke is the overall number one now that Zion's back. So Izzo is mad. And has every right to be. When you beat Michigan three times and you win the conference tournament and you get a share of the regular season title, you think that you'd do better than be a seed, or you think you'd get a better draw than Michigan. They did beat them three times. In fact, is Michigan State might have even had an argument for a number one seed. And not only do they not get that, they get the toughest number two seed. But when you lose three times to Indiana and Illinois, you do open yourself up to this possibility. But you can see where they're upset, especially when you consider the fact that Michigan State, and this is an unbelievable stat, Michigan State is 1-11 against Duke since Tom Izzo took over. So that stings a lot. Now, that said, if you want to talk Selection Sunday traditions, there's one new one and one old one that were both electric yesterday. Let me start with Bobby Hurley in Arizona State. Remember last year when the Sun Devils got in, Hurley and his team sprinted out back and they jumped in the pool. That is still one of the greatest Selection Sunday celebrations ever. One of my favorites of all time. And then this year, with the team on the bubble, Hurley goes back to work. They didn't just ignore the bubble. They embraced the bubble with Bobby posing for a bubble machine. Buy a bubble machine for Twitter. My man. Man, he is working it. He gets it. He said afterwards, he tried to make sure that everybody was in the same seats, even that he was wearing the same socks. And then came the announcement. Yeah! Another huge celebration, but there was no jumping in the pool. Nobody jumped in the pool on that, which is a sign of how far that program has come. You don't need to cannonball your way into the tournament. So another great, great celebration, but different. Now, when it comes to Selection Sunday traditions, nothing is going to top the annual sit-down with John Calipari. You know how this goes. Cal sits down in front of the camera and lets the world know about how the committee made it personal and about how the committee hurt his kids because they were looking to hurt him. And honestly, there are definitely years where it felt like he had a point. And he had a point yesterday, but it was not about the committee coming for him. It was about him coming after recruits. Did you check his living room yesterday? Look at this. If you're watching on TV, you should see it. And if you're not, you should go find it. That's just Cal casually having a conversation in front of a bunch of framed jerseys of all the legends that he's coached at Kentucky. He's talking about, well, honestly, I've got no idea what he's talking about. It doesn't even matter what he's talking about. It doesn't matter what he was talking about because nobody was listening. Everybody was looking at all the framed jerseys of DeMarcus Cousins, John Wall, Anthony Davis, Derrick Rose, right behind him. He had them all set up in his living room by the fireplace. And I love how casual the whole thing was, or was supposed to be. Not only were the frames not hung on the wall, they were still wrapped in plastic, like he had just gotten back from the frame store at the mall and hadn't had time to pick them up yet. You know, and when they're all there, they're just begging for a question about them. Hey, John. Looks like you got some new artwork. What's going on? Pick up a new, few new prints before the interview? Oh, you mean those things? Yeah, glad you asked about those things. Those are just some of the jerseys of some of the guys that I used to coach. You know, Boogie, John, AD, Derek. Maybe you've heard of them. They've been to, I don't know, maybe 1,000 All-Star games. Collectively, they've made about $1 billion. I think some of these guys might even be Team USA players. You've heard of Team USA, right? That's when guys are so good that they get to go to the Olympics. You know, whatever. Not a big deal. Nothing new. It's what you already know. It's what you already know and what I'm trying to project. That if you want to be a lottery pick, then you come here. If you want to be a gold medalist, then you come here. If you want to be both a lottery pick and a gold medalist, you know where to sign your name. You think this is bad? You think this is bad? Hey, can you get the camera guy to pan out? Pan out. Go look at my bedroom. Look at my office. Look at my garage. Look at our kitchen. Hell, this crib is a freaking shrine to what I have built. I know I've got a Devin Booker in here somewhere. Same with Kevin Knox, Julius Randle, Marcus Camby. You know Marcus Camby's in here. At least I think I do. I'm starting to run out of space. I know I had an Eric Bledsoe jersey at some point. I think I've got Tyreke Evans in the garage. Jamal Murray. My man's 18-5 with the Nuggets every single night, and I don't even have space for him. I don't know. I mean, hell, you know I've coached a lot of NBA players. What was your question again? Who cares about the question? The whole interview was about what he was not saying with his words, but about what he was saying with the interior design. It was incredible. You know, just casually dropping names without even mentioning names. If anybody else did what Cal did, it would be the cheesiest, corniest thing ever. But when Cal does it, it's the most Cal thing ever, and I love it. I mean, it's amazing. Truly next level Cal. Always be recruiting. Always be closing. Keep doing you, Cal. Keep doing you, Cal. And don't ever let Rex in the ABQ, or anybody else for that matter, poop in your ice cream.
There's a bucket of poop and there's a bucket of ice cream. You can put all the ice cream in that poop that you want. It doesn't change it. But one little pinch of that poop in that ice cream ruins that ice cream. And I'll tell a guy, you, my man, are the poop in our ice cream.
That never not makes me laugh. Friend of the program, he is John Rothstein. John, what's going on? How are you?
Jim, after Thanksgiving and up until New Year's, people greet each other and they say, Happy Holidays. I start that process after Selection Sunday.
You do, John. In fact, before we get to the field itself and break down the regions, I've got one question for you, just to follow up on that. What month is this, John?
Oh, this is March.
This is March. John Rothstein joining us. I just wanted to hear you say it. All right, so overall, where were you, John, when you were starting to put together the 68 over the last few days? How hard was that? For instance, were you struggling with teams to keep out, or was the challenge actually trying to figure out which 68 who deserved to be in?
I had 67 of the 68 teams on the board, Jim, as I was making my big list, you know, obviously getting ready for Selection Sunday. The one team that I did not have in the field of 68 was Belmont. I had TCU in their place. But when I look at it from top to bottom and break it down from soup to nuts, I thought the selection committee did an outstanding job in terms of putting all the seeds in the right places. The first thing that jumped, you know, out to me, I think we're splitting atoms at this point, was Cincinnati did not deserve to be a 7 seed. They should have been a 4 or 5. But, Jim, unlike the last couple of years when Mick Cronin has had to go to Sacramento and Spokane, he gets to play games in Columbus, roughly 2 hours away from Cincinnati. So that was the big thing that jumped out to me. But other than that, in terms of seeding, I think the committee did a great job.
John Rothstein joining us. I had it the same way, John. I think they did a really nice job. I think the Cincinnati should not have been 7. I think Michigan State probably has an argument that they should not be a 2 with Duke. But overall, they did a really good job. Speaking of Duke, John, they've been a different team since the return of Zion Williamson. But if you look at them as a team, what is their biggest weakness? What is the one thing that could trip them up?
Outside shooting, and that's the Achilles heel all season long for Duke. Can they make enough outside shots? And I'm not saying Duke is going to lose this game in the round of 32 against UCF, but if Mike Krzyzewski does indeed face off against his former assistant, former player, Johnny Dawkins, Duke will be forced to go over the top of the Knights' defense. In studying UCF this season, I was amazed at their physicality up front with Colin Smith, with Taco Fall, with also Chad Brown. They force you to go over the top of the defense, and it's not shots blocked with Taco Fall. It's shots altered. He's devastating defensively at 7'6". That's a game to watch. Duke potentially facing off one of Coach K's prize pupils, Johnny Dawkins.
John Rothstein joining us. All right, so why don't we work our way through the regions? You've got a tradition of naming each region. Let's start with the East. What is the name you've given to it this year, and why?
Well, I look at, obviously, Duke, and I see NBA prospects. I see the same thing at Mississippi State with Reggie Perry. Virginia Tech has Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Maryland has Bruno Fernando. LSU has Naz Reid. Yale has Mie Ioane. Jim, this is the region of prospects.
John Rothstein joining us. I like it. Now, it was not that long ago, John, that LSU was a top 10 team in the country. Now they're in turmoil with the issues surrounding head coach Will Wade. When you look at that matchup with Yale, what kind of thoughts do you have?
Well, I think one of the things that's not being talked about right now is the fact that Will Wade is not a part of LSU's program because he's suspended indefinitely. Say what you want, Jim, about the optics right now in Baton Rouge. Will Wade coached LSU to an SEC regular season title. And since he has been suspended, they played two games. One, they beat a Vanderbilt team that, for all intents and purposes, has not won a game in the SEC this season, and they also lost a game to a Florida team where they unraveled down the stretch. Yale has won a game in the NCAA tournament in the last 5 years. James Jones proved that a couple of years ago when Yale beat Baylor. They've got 4 of their leading scorers who were juniors and seniors, and they've got an NBA prospect in Mie Ioane. I don't like the dysfunction right now around LSU's program. We spent a lot of time the last couple weeks wondering how Duke would fare without Zion Williamson if he couldn't play in the NCAA tournament. Now we need to start talking about how wounded LSU is without Will Wade. I like Yale.
John Rothstein joining us. All right, John, then you've got the region of sizzle, a.k.a. the West region. What do you make of the region top to bottom and as a whole?
Well, it's the region of sizzle for a reason. I mean, think about what we have going on in this region right now. Gonzaga has Rui Hachimura. Marquette has Marcus Howard. Murray State has Ja Morant. Even in the play-in game, St. John's, Arizona State, you've got Lugans Dort, an NBA prospect for Arizona State, and St. John's has Shamari Ponds. Texas Tech also has Jared Culver. I think, Jim, pound for pound, inch for inch, Gonzaga has the toughest road out of any number one seed in the NCAA tournament, because if they advance and Syracuse beats Baylor, you are going to have Gonzaga facing Syracuse on a 48-hour turnaround. And then, if Gonzaga is to beat Syracuse, you're going to have to take on Florida State in the Sweet 16, a team that just pounded Virginia for 40 minutes, and a team that beat Gonzaga last year in the Sweet 16. Leonard Hamilton's been coaching a long time. He's kind of, in my opinion, turning into the sentimental favorite of this tournament. 70 years old, even though he looks 54. I think that could be a dynamite matchup to watch. And then if Gonzaga does beat Florida State, you got John Beilein and Michigan staring at you across the other side. And, Jim, you know this as well as anybody. March is the month when John Beilein plays chess and everybody else plays checkers.
Always, always. And I love Coach Ham, John Rothstein, joining us. You know, John, I love that matchup potentially between Arizona State and Buffalo. Of course, Bobby Hurley and Nate Oates, but that only happens if the Sun Devils do get past St. John's and Dayton. How do you see that first four matchup going?
I've got Arizona State, and Arizona State's had some tough losses this year, but they've had some really big wins. They've beaten Mississippi State. They've beaten Utah State. They beat Kansas when they were number one in the country. They beat Washington. And Arizona State in the Pac-12, and I'm saying this for you and all my people out west, you've got something to prove. You were in the NCAA tournament last year. You didn't win a game past the round of 64. Didn't win a game in total. This year, you only get three teams in the NCAA tournament because Dana Altman pretty much outcoached the whole league for the last 2 months of the season. The Pac-12 should come in with something to prove. I look at Bobby Hurley as the guy to carry the torch, and I see Zylan Cheatham, college basketball's version of a Swiss Army knife, to be a breakout star for Arizona State, a 12-10-3 guy, Jim, does a little bit of everything, could be one of those guys who doesn't get drafted but makes an NBA roster. I've got Arizona State not just beating St. John's. I've got Bobby Hurley beating Buffalo and moving on to the round of 32.
John Rothstein joining us. All right, John, this matchup here, I absolutely love this. Villanova, the defending national champs, draw St. Mary's in the round of 64. You threw it all the way back to 2010 when the Gaels beat Villanova. What do you make of how St. Mary's handled Gonzaga in the conference tournament, and how do they match up with Villanova this time around?
Randy Bennett is the mastermind, and he was a mastermind in 2010 when he obviously spotlighted Omar Samhan as St. Mary's upset Villanova and reached the Sweet 16. Villanova, to me, has wrung out the sponge this year. I've got them winning one game here in the region of grind, and that's what this region is. St. Mary's, ball control offense. Virginia, Tony Bennett. Wisconsin, Greg Gard. Oregon's defense has held Washington to under 50 points twice in each of the last 2 weeks. You've got Kansas State, and of course you've got Rick Barnes and Matt Painter. The South region in the 2019 NCAA tournament, the region of grind.
We're talking to John Rothstein for a couple of more moments. John, let me get your thoughts on my guy Eric Musselman's team. What is the latest on Jordan Caroline's health, and overall, how does Nevada look to you right now?
Eric Musselman told me before the selection show right now that Jordan Caroline is expected to play in the first NCAA tournament game against Florida. That's good news for, obviously, Nevada. Nevada, to me, Jim, and this is a big thing that I think is a struggle for teams outside of power conferences, you go a long period of time without playing teams who are expected to be in the NCAA tournament. It's a hard thing for a college coach to manage from a psychological perspective in terms of how you're going to get your guys motivated to practice, how you're going to get your guys motivated to win every single day. Mark Few's dealt with it. Eric Musselman's dealing with it. But Mike White is dealing with a team that defends. Mike White is dealing with a team that has the power of belief. They've beaten LSU twice in the last couple of weeks. They've got a stud point guard in Andrew Nembhard. They have pieces that are burgeoning like Keontae Johnson. The SEC has been on an uptick in men's basketball. It will be on an uptick in the West region. And Jim, fittingly enough, if Florida beats Nevada, there will be sizzle. It will be just like the region it's named after.
John Rothstein. All right, John, so before you go, as the field stands right now, who do you expect to see in the Final Four?
Well, Virginia will, I think, exercise the demons out of the region of grind. Duke will be out of the region of prospects. Michigan will be out of the region of sizzle. And then out of the Midwest region, the region of pace, because any region that has Carolina, Auburn, Iowa State, and Kentucky, you've got to have great pace. What I saw in the ACC tournament was this, beyond the Duke angle, I saw a team in North Carolina that was able to punch back against Duke with the Blue Devils at full strength. I know Duke was only lost once this year when they were at full strength. That was against Gonzaga. But I saw a team that was capable of trading blows. And I know when the brackets came out that everybody thought that we were due for a Kentucky-Duke showdown in a national championship game. I saw more from North Carolina in the loss to Duke than I saw from any other team during championship week in a conference tournament. And I kind of feel like it was round two of Rocky IV when Stallone nailed Drago. And you said the Russians cut, and it's a bad cut. And for all the things we've had in sports, as great as the NCAA tournament has been, we have never had a game where North Carolina played Duke for a national championship. And in phase four, with a healthy Zion Williamson, North Carolina will win the national championship in what could be the most anticipated national championship game we've seen. Tobacco Road to Minneapolis. That's appointment television.
Mark it down. Carolina to win it all. College basketball insider for CBS, Sports Illustrated, and WFAN. Host of the College Hoops Today podcast for Compass Media and a friend of the program. John, you've never sounded better. Great job. Nice to have you back. Hope we can do it again soon.
Jim, three words. This is March.
So check this out. The post office is great, right? They do an amazing job. But the problem with the post office is nobody really has time to go there. I mean, you're busy, but I've got a solution. Stamps.com. There is your solution. Stamps.com. One of the most popular time-saving tools for small businesses. Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office and saves you money with discounts that you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. Once your mail is ready, just hand it to your mail carrier or drop it into a mailbox. It's that simple. And right now, I have got a special offer, which includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Rome. Stamps.com, enter Rome. You will be pumped that you did this. Stamps.com, enter Rome. And the tweet reads, LA Marathon in 7 days. Got some great training in this weekend. And it's Hawk teeing it up. It's on a course, golf course in La Habra somewhere. All right, so Adam, when I checked in with you on Friday, your take was, I have not run in 10 days, but I'm going to get in a long run this weekend. Judging from this tweet, you did not run, did you?
No, I did not run. I ran from my golf cart to the beer shack at the turn to grab another beer for the back nine, but that was the only running I did this weekend, Jim.
When was the last time you had a run?
14 days ago. It was Sunday of 2 weekends ago. So 14 or 15, depending on if you count today as a day.
So literally nothing. Not like a long run. You know, a half marathon. I mean, not even like a 3 or 4 mile run. Like literally you have not put your running shoes on in 2 weeks.
No, that is deadly accurate. I have not put on my running shoes in 2 weeks. No.
So what's going on here?
I've just completely resigned to the fact that I want my next run to be the marathon because I'm so over this crap. It is daunting. It is annoying. It takes a lot of time. It's not like,
Hawk, it's a marathon.
Right. But it's not like you're going to the gym for 45 minutes or whatever to put some weights up. Like, to train adequately for this, you have to go put the time in. You got to be out there for 2 to 3 hours, and I'm sick of it. I'm over it, and I don't want to do it anymore. So my next run will be the marathon, and I made that decision this weekend when my friends called and said, do you want to go golf? And I said, yes, I do.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I'm like, why would I train for a marathon? Hey, look, I understand this. I myself have not committed to running a marathon. It's, you know, challenging enough to commit to 60 minutes of workout every single day, 45 minutes every single day. I feel you, but hadn't you factored all of this in? I mean, after all, it is a marathon.
Yeah, I just completely gassed out, flamed out. I'm a mental midget, if you will. I can't do it. I don't want to do it. Nothing about the prospect of going out and training appeals to me, especially since there's no medal or glory at the end. So I figured the next run will be the one with the medal and the glory.
It's really a bad, bad plan. Have you done any research at all, and probably best that you not, however, have you done any research as to what happens to an individual? In fact, I'll open it up to Marathon Nation because they've come in before. Have you done any research to find out what happens if you are in no way prepared to run that distance and then you show up day of trying to run that distance?
Yeah, I've done some, and obviously the internet can provide you whatever results you're looking for. So I have gone down the rabbit hole of positive affirmation. I am reading blogs from people that went with no training and finished successfully. I have avoided the blogs where people say that they went with no training and they ended up
dead.
well, worse than dead, because at least you're dead and you don't have to deal with the embarrassment. The people that wind up ejecting their bowels around mile 14, if you will. Right. Yeah, so those are the ones that I've avoided. I'm just looking at the people who are like, yeah, I finished in 5 hours and put my sticker on the car and got out of there.
What is the longest run you have ever taken in training?
13.1, and I did that twice. Two halves. The last one I did 2 weeks ago was a half, and I did one before that. So as I told my dad yesterday, who asked me how it was going, now I just got to do that twice in the same day.
Is that what you're going with?
Just add them
up. I've
done
it twice. Now all I have to do is twice, do that same thing twice in the same day, and then it's all over, and I never have to worry about it ever again. Is that what you're going with?
That's exactly it. That is what I'm going with. Just some simple math.
I got one word for you. Cheat. Cheat. Dude, you're not finishing that thing. Just cheat. What could happen? You'll never get caught. Cheat.
I might cheat.
Dude, I want you to cheat because you will get caught. It'll be so good for the show. But at least you won't die. All right? All right, so what I want to do, if I were you, I would never be in this spot. If I were you, I'd walk in front of a bus. No, if I were you, Hawk, what I would do is mainline our guy, David Goggins. Now, Goggins is a world-class athlete, and you're a world-class bag. Just kidding, Adam. Goggins is a world-class athlete, but he had to run an ultra marathon without really training that much and just showed up and did it and was able to do it just through the force of his sheer will and his mental strength. I would mainline yourself, Goggins. Just keep pumping that through your veins until this weekend, and maybe you'll be able to visualize it. And when you talk about excrement, you know, this was a guy who was pretty much pooping himself on a plastic chair and kept going. Busted shins, the whole thing.
You have a big dump in your
pants. Go listen to the episode. That was ep number, let me think. Hold on. I want to say
I'm going to throw out a guess that it was 35.
35 or 25. Whatever, 25. I'm right, you're wrong. Whatever it was, man, just listen to that. On an endless loop until it's time to run, and you'll be so geeked up and so full of it, you'll turn your attitude around. Or just don't do it, Adam. Man, just fall on the sword.
$190. I'm doing it. I'm going to listen to Goggins because I kind of fancy myself a David Goggins. So I'm going to...
How? Why?
We're very similar.
What do you have in common with Goggins?
Mental tenacity.
What do any of us have in common with Goggins? He's the baddest man alive. Not named Jocko.
Or me. So yeah, I'm going to just crush David Goggins' podcast and go run this thing on Sunday. Yep.
What's the wife think about this? Is she so upset?
She has no opinion, really. She's kind of thinks
that... Oh, she does. Yeah, she does.
She thinks that I should have never signed up in the first place. That's her take, that it was a dumb thing to sign up. And that when I did sign up, she was 4 months pregnant. So that excuse is terrible on my part, that it was because we had a kid.
If you punk out and don't do it, will she be relieved or will she be disappointed?
I believe that she would be neither. Honestly, she has so little interest in what I'm doing outside of parenting right now. She just wants me to take the baby when I get home. Like, this whole marathon thing is kind of worse for her than it is for me. She's not excited
it's
that I'm going to
leave.
It's
worse for me than it is for both of you.
Right. She's not that thrilled that I'm going to leave on a Sunday all day to drive up to Los Angeles to run from Dodger Stadium to Santa Monica. She would much rather me be at the house helping out.
Yeah, but wait until when you're done with whatever you do, be it 13 miles, 20 miles, whatever it is. She's going to have to care for three babies.
That's right. And she's also concerned that she's going to have to make the drive up to come pick me up because she's worried that I'm not going to be able to drive home.
It's going to go badly. All right. Hey, best of luck, man. Let me know how it goes. Let me tell you about my bookie. They have been in business for years, and they are growing fast. And the best part is they pay out fast. So when you call that 12-over-5 upset this year, like you do every single year, at least that's what you tell me when you call the program, this time make sure you celebrate. Celebrate by pocketing cold, hard cash. March Madness is the most exciting, action-packed sporting event of the year. To me, it's the best sporting event there is because the format is so amazing. And especially if you want to get a little action, place your bets with MyBookie right now before you miss out. Bet with the best. Only at MyBookie. Try it for yourself. Go to MyBookie.ag today. If you deposit right now, MyBookie will give you a 50% sign-up bonus all the way up to $1,000 just for entering the promo code Rome. That's promo code Rome. You play, you win, you get paid. Only at MyBookie.ag. Greg Herenda is the head coach. He joins us right now. Greg, it's been a little while, but it's great to have you back. How are you?
Rome, it's great to be back. Good to hear your voice again, and it's great to be in Dayton, man.
Man, it is so good to hear your voice too, Greg. Great to visit with you. I was eager to do it. So you left for Dayton this morning. How was that trip? And then how do you go about preparing between now and tip-off?
Well, we roll just like you do, charter, you know, and it's just great to see the freshmen and sophomores and juniors see the plane and walk on it and know they have as much leg room. Like, the simple things are what kids like, you know, and just the food on the plane and the charter plane and the welcome that we got at the hotel today in Dayton was incredible. So these kids are like a mile high. But we know we have a game to play in just a little over 4 hours, and we're ready for it. But it's great flight. Weather's great in Dayton, and we're just heading over to practice right now at Wright State.
My man. I love hearing that. I'm glad you made time for it, too. So you beat St. Francis 85-76 last Tuesday night. You win the conference tourney. So you knew that you were in the field of 68. Knowing that, what was Selection Sunday like for you and your players? What was it like when you saw your name come up?
You know, it was wild, Rome, because we were the third region to go. So the suspense, even though we knew we were going, the suspense of who we were playing and when and where was incredible. I could only imagine these bubble guys, you know, when you're sitting there not knowing that you might go home and not be able to participate. So we had a great, great day. We have a new athletic director, Brad Herbert, who came from Sacred Heart via Northwestern, who's a big-time guy. We had the building was rocking. Our Rothman Center was rocking it. Then we had a March to Madness to our auditorium on campus that we filled. So, we were covered by the Post and all the New Jersey, the Bergen Record, Jersey Journal. And I think we're ahead of schedule from last year. We went in 2016, I should say. But now in 2019, I just think we're more prepared as a team, as a program, as a university. So we're just taking it all in and just really blessed and privileged to be here today.
You're sincerely pumping me up. I love hearing this. Greg Herenda joining us. Now, one of the things you've said is, quote, "I tell our team all the time that you will forever be judged by what you're not supposed to do."
You're the best.
I love that quote. Tell me what you mean by that.
Amen, brother. I just think in life, you've got to do things. Anyone can do the ordinary. And these guys, if we win a game, it's history, and they'll forever be remembered by something that they probably shouldn't do. And, like, we don't beat out, you know, we're not beating out people for recruits. Like, we're not getting – we got guys that go to McDonald's, man. We don't get McDonald's All-Americans. So when these kids come, it's just all in front of us. It's a dream, and then when you realize that dream, Rome, it's – you know the feeling. It's euphoric. It's crazy. And I think I always don't be ordinary, man. Don't be ordinary. Come to Fairleigh Dickinson. You're going to be different. You're going to be out in front. And that's win, lose, or draw. You know, we learned some hard lessons. You know, we were 1-4, Rome, in our conference to start the season. And then we won 15 out of 17 to this day. Our last loss is on Valentine's Day, and yesterday was St. Patrick's Day. So we're playing consistent, good basketball, but we're playing a really good Prairie View basketball team. And guess what, man? It's not going to be easy. We got 40 minutes of hell because they steal the ball, they press, they run, they're athletic. Byron Smith is a great young coach, and we got our hands full.
Fairleigh Dickinson head coach Greg Herenda joining us. I want to make that point. I want to reiterate what you just said. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you guys, back on January 19th, you go back that far, you lost 6 of 7. You were 6-11 overall. Teams that start the season that way are not supposed to go to the NCAA tournament. How did you turn it around?
Our players, quite honestly, we had one, and I'm not a big advocate of it, but we had a film session where there was just a few, there was like little murmurs going on. And I it had to come to a head. And our sophomore Elijah Williams from Evanston, Illinois, after the film session says, "Guys, we got to meet." And the players met. And sometimes, Rome, you know this, in the NFL locker rooms, high-level locker rooms, people, you know, you look at the Steelers, you know, you just locker rooms can explode. Our locker room came together. And then on top of that, we just started playing really good basketball and playing together, and we understood who we were, what we're about, and where we're going. So I give our players so much credit. And you don't know who's going to be your leader. It could be a sophomore. But our seniors, Mike Holloway is our big man inside, is a great leader, strong, tough kid that can play. He's got to play great tomorrow. And Darnell Edge, Reggie Miller is doing our game tomorrow. We've been calling him our Ray Allen, but we're going to start out in Dayton calling him our Reggie Miller. Darnell Edge is one of the great shooters in America, led the country last year in free throw percentage. Right now he's top 5 3-point field goal percentage. We got two great seniors, Rom.
We're talking Fairleigh Dickinson basketball right now with the head coach, Greg Horenda. Greg, I know you don't want to make it about you, but when you and I spoke about the tournament in 2016, we talked a little bit about your journey, but the journey has become even more challenging more remarkable since then. I mean, come on now. You and your wife, Jill, and your son, Trey, have a tradition that you go to the Final Four together. The story goes that you were at the airport with Kerry Kittles and your leg did not feel very good. What were you thinking at that time?
Who does your homework? You're unbelievable.
Come on, man. Come on, man. You know.
I know. Okay, keep going. I don't want to interrupt, but I am so impressed.
So what were you thinking? So you're at the airport with Kerry Kittles, and you do not feel well. Your leg doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
I said, Kerry, my leg is killing me, man. And then I said, I don't think I'm going to go on the flight to my wife. And she looked at me, and our bags were packed. A year before, I had a similar situation at the Final Four, but I went to the doctor and I got a full, nothing was wrong. And I was happy that nothing was wrong, but I didn't feel right. That was Phoenix. When I went to San Antonio, my son Trey and I walked like 75 yards outside of our hotel. I'll never forget it. Jim Nance was in front of us and Mark View. And I said, Trey, I got to sit down. And he's like, wow, Dad, here's, you know, all these guys. And I couldn't walk. And Jim, I've run a marathon. I'm a very active, you know, person my whole life. I was a college scholarship player, the whole nine yards. For me not to be able to walk something. The next morning we got up and I was in the emergency room and my leg was swelled up. I couldn't walk. I had 104.5 fever and they didn't know what was wrong with me. And it was serious. And it was the people at Methodist Hospital in San Antonio, Greg Seiler, who's a San Antonio Spurs fanatic, every day came and visited me. The head coach at Incarnate Word, Carson Cunningham, who played for Gene Katie at Purdue, came and spent the whole day with me. And my team was behind me, texting me, calling me. And finally, I told my wife, I don't want to die in Texas. Nothing wrong with Texas, but I didn't want to die there. And she was laughing. My son, but I was serious. I thought I could die, and I just wanted to get to Jersey. And I got back to Jersey, and with a long recovery, I'm back, and I'm coaching a great basketball team.
Yeah, but the thing is, Greg, and there's even more to it than that, because they discovered two clots. You had one in your leg. You had one in your abdomen. As you mentioned, you were running a fever of over 104. And the fear then is, with the blood clots in a situation like that, they could break off and maybe hemorrhage. And then if that weren't scary enough, the point that you didn't mention, your father, Anthony, passed away suddenly when he was 50. Right? I've got to think that's in your mind too, right?
That's all I thought of was my father, because we never found out what my father died of. And back then, my mother didn't want to have an autopsy, and we all assumed that he died of a heart attack. And in this day and age with education, he could easily have had an embolism, and that could have been me. And I look like my father. I don't have his brains. He graduated from Stevens Institute of Technology, engineering. He was one of the highest students in his class, developed the first nuclear power plant in the state of New Jersey in Oyster Creek. So I don't have his brains, but I got his looks. I have a lot of his genes. And I hung on, man. God kept me here for a reason. And I really think that this team and the game of basketball, I had a lot to do with me making it and getting back to this point.
Greg Horenda joining us. You beat that thing. You beat that thing, and you're back, and you're better than ever. Mike Holloway Jr., Greg, a guy you mentioned earlier, he has said that your illness motivated him as a player. What's it mean to hear that from him?
I mean, it means a lot, because Mike and I, Rome, I coach him hard. You know, I'm an old school coach, so they have to be accountable. So Mike and I have always loved each other, but we sometimes do not see eye to eye. Let's just put it that way. And that's good. I mean, that's sport. And for him to come back, and when I came back, to embrace me the way he did and all the players, and if that motivated him, if this is reality. We tell them all the time, we have alums from Fairleigh Dickinson come in and say, guys, you don't know how lucky you are. And right in our midst is your coach that is so lucky. And we have a player, Nadi Passiri, that played two games and hurt his back, and he's been out for the remainder of the season. So he lost his ability to play. So when you have something great, you need to cherish it. And I cherish my relationship with our players. And Mike Holloway's right there at the top.
So bottom line this for me, when you're at a program like that, and I know I went to college at a smaller school, and you make it, yep. Every trip to the tournament is special. It's so special. But as you've said, quote, I was in a bed, I was in a wheelchair, then a walker, a cane, yes. And now we're dancing, end quote. Is there any way to put into words what the last 12 months have been like for you?
Really a movie. That's all I can say, because when I got home, man, I walked for 3 months, I couldn't do everything that I could do. You know, I didn't know where I was going, but I really don't have words. I think it's a movie. If you wrote the script, no one would believe it. But God, you know, you mentioned my wife, Jill, and my son, Trey, my in-laws in South Carolina, and my brothers in California. But just the emails and the texts and my coworkers. But ultimately, man, I'm just telling you, Rome, when I was in that hospital bed, I go back, I pretended like I was in a tight TV timeout. And just like I tell my players, hey, we got to cut it from 16 to 12, 12 to 8. That's what I did. I really thought about my players. And if I'm going to push them, I got to push myself. And that was a motivating force that really, really stuck with me. And I think it really helped me through, and I really cherish. I lost my college basketball coach, Bert Hamill, earlier this year with a blood clot. He had an embolism and died as well. So, I survived. And it sounds like it's a made-for-TV story. It's not, man. It's real. It's me, and it's me and you right now, Rome.
Greg freaking Herrenda. He is the head basketball coach at Fairleigh Dickinson, man. I am so pumped. I am so pumped to see you right there tomorrow night against Prairie View A&M.
We got to win a game, man. And ultimately, and I know you got to go, but our goal, we've never won.
Coach, I got nowhere to be. You take your time.
I got to win. We have to win a game here. Like the last time we talked, and we had a great talk, and we ran into a buzzsaw. Florida Gulf Coast should not have been in the first four. But we absolutely have to win a game to make sure that we can do one thing, and that's create history at Fairleigh Dickinson University. We've never won a game, and if we do that, you know what? The school, the state of New Jersey, Hoboken, North Bergen, St. Peter's Prep, all the good people out there will be a part of it, and it's happening tomorrow night at 6:40.
Hey, last thought. So I think that the kids, you know, at that age, they're only going to have so much perspective. You know better, especially given what you went through for the past year. I know you want them to enjoy the moment. I know you want them to take it all in. But what I'm hearing from you is, guys, don't just be happy to be here. We got to find a way to win. We need to win one.
Amen. We're really loose. We're like off the floor. We're just kind of the whole deal. But these guys know. Rome, we got a kid, Jaleel Jenkins. If you watch the game, and I know Reggie's doing the game, you're going to fall in love with him. He was not on the first, second, or third team in our conference. He averaged 13 and change, number one assist to turnover ratio. He's got the biggest heart and smallest body. He's as fast as they come, a terrific player. Caleb Bishop played for Bob Hurley. At St. Anthony's High School, had 20-11 in the championship game, 6'8 kid that made 3 for 3 for 3, and we got an exciting, good basketball team. And the difference between this team and 16 is that 16 we were the third youngest team in America, and now we've grown up. We got two kids that won it in 16 that are going to lead us in 19. But I'm just telling you, this is going to be an exciting game because Prairie View really, really guards. They're like, when I was at Holy Cross, we played Arkansas, the 40 minutes of hell, the year before they won the whole thing. And they're not, obviously Arkansas won a national championship, but at our levels, they're the Arkansas of the SWAC, and they're really well coached. Byron Smith really gets after it. A lot of respect for them. So it's going to be a dogfight.
This game is tomorrow night, 6:40 p.m. Eastern. Clones, if you're listening, make sure you find a way to see it. Fairleigh Dickinson, Prairie View A&M, Greg Horrenda is the head coach. My man, I don't even want to go. I even hate to let you go.
Let's keep going, man. What do you got?
Hey, go back to Jenkins for a minute. I got one thing for you. Go back to Jenkins. When you talk about a kid like that size and that kind of heart, is that nature or nurture? Was he wired like that, or did he make himself like that?
He is – Now this is 35 years, Rob, and I've coached Shaheen Holloway, was the McDonald's MVP of the McDonald's All-American game and played at Seton Hall and now's the head coach at St. Peter's. He's got like Shaheen Holloway heart. The kid, he's got like blonde hair, green eyes, light skin, black kid that is just infectious. I mean, you want to just take him home and love him, but on the floor, he's a tiger. He's absolutely fearless, and he makes everybody on our team better. He really, really does, man. Exciting player, and he leads the team with the ball, and he's got to take care of it tomorrow because they're going to try to take it from him, Rome, I'm telling you.
This kid's got it, though, doesn't he? This kid's got it. What's he go, $160?
But he's gotten stronger. That's the one. He came in like an eighth grader, and now he's a junior. You know what? He's only a sophomore at Fairleigh Dickinson, but he looks like he's just grown up 2 or 3 years. But you got to watch him. He's worth the watch. And again, I told him right before we went into the conference tournament, you weren't first, second, or third team, but let's show them in this tournament that you're the best point guard in our conference. And I think right now everybody's watching him and knowing that Jaleel Jenkins is the best point guard in our conference, and we're still playing, and I'm really proud of the kid.
He looks like he knows it, too. He knows everybody's watching. He wants to be that guy. He wants to be in that spot, and that game is going to be tomorrow. Greg, listen, I know you got work to do, and you do have work to do. Good luck. Good luck. We'll be watching, and if you win that game, you know I'm looking for you.
I can't appreciate your time anymore, man. You are the greatest. Your homework, your research, and your love, I feel it, and I really, really appreciate it totally, and I thank you so much.
My man, you got it, Greg, and it's all true. Bob in Calgary. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hey, Rome, I think Hawks can be just fine.
Why?
You know why?
No, Bob, I have no idea why. Why?
Because I once saw a horse. They just tied a stick and a carrot in front of him, and he ran 10 kilometers and still had the time to tape Sex in the City later on that day.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Hey, Bob. You know, they'll say what they'll say about you, Bob, and generally what they say is you're a moron. But at least they can't call you a one-trick pony. The streak is at 7. The all-time record is 9. Jeff in SoCal. Jeff, how are you?
Rome, I'm great. Hey, you know that saying, when someone starts a sentence with, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but that someone's about to be disrespected. Well, Jim, I'm going to start this call by saying, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but your boy Adam Hawk is absolutely bleeped for this Sunday. Jim, I've actually run 6 of these LA marathons. And Hawk, I think you should start your Marathon 2K19 playlist with the banger, Time to Die, because my main, you may actually die. Jim, do you know why they give guys like Hawk those marathon bibs? It's so the first responders can identify the body. I mean, Hawk, you're not going to make it, my man. But here's my analysis. You know, I'm thinking maybe 5.5, 6 hours. And if you do make it to, mile 13, which you've trained to, that's sunset in La Brea, Hawk. You're still 13 miles from Santa Monica Pier. I wouldn't even drive that. Okay, so let's say he makes it to mile 21. And this is San Vicente all the way down Brentwood through Santa Monica. And this is where it's really going to hit the fan for Hawk, Romy. I mean, I've seen people cramp up, get ambulance, people collapse. Dude, a 28-year-old had a heart attack in 2015. But don't take it from me. Take it from the LA Times. 4 LA Marathon participants suffer potentially life-threatening medical problems. Jim, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Hawk running the L.A. Marathon without training is the worst idea since showing up to a party with a boner and sweatpants. I mean, this
That's not a good call.
you don't like that car.
I don't like that car. Not a very good car.
That worked for everybody, right?
Good night now.